Hey everyone, I just wanted to take a minute to talk about the Eufy Video Lock. It's a smart lock that's really easy to set up with just a Phillips screwdriver and no extra drilling. It's got a keyless entry, so you don't need to worry about fumbling with the keys when your hands are full. Also, you don't need to worry about handing out extra keys when you're in a pinch, your kids losing them, or people copying the key and passing it around to each other. Something else I like about the Eufy Video Lock is that it has a camera built in and it works as a doorbell as well. Personally, I think the Eufy Video Lock is great for apartments or cottages where you can't necessarily add extra holes for a video doorbell. My favorite part about it, though, is that there isn't a monthly fee and your recordings are locally stored, so you don't have to worry about someone else owning your doorbell data. You can find it on Amazon, or if you want to know more, search Eufy Video Lock, that's E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Hello and welcome to the Homemysticism Podcast. My name's Phil. Joining me as usual, I've got Rohan. Hey, Rohan, how you doing?
Hey, good.
And today we're joined by Jasper. How's it going?
Hi, good. How are you?
Good, thank you. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Before we get started, this episode of the Homemysticism Podcast is sponsored by Homemysticism Cloud by Nabucasa. Easily access your local Home Assistant instance remotely for a small monthly fee that supports the Home Assistant and the ESP Home projects. Configuration is done via the user interface, so no fiddling with the router settings, SSL certificates, or any YAML. Jasper, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. Whereabouts in the world are you joining us from?
Well, I'm in the Netherlands, one of the places I think Home Assistant started.
That's right. That's true. Yeah, Paulus, founder of Homemysticism, home grown in Netherlands, I believe. And now lives in the US. But yeah, there you go. So that's good. And of course, in our last episode, we just had Frank on as well. So yeah, Netherlands has a special place for Homemysticism.
Yeah, and just home automation as a whole too. There's a lot of cool companies out there that are doing a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think it's those Scandinavian countries where I think get all the cool home automation stuff. Like, seem to be local first and all that, or really have like open APIs looking at you picnic for grocery orders. How did you get here today? Like, where did you start off with home automation and Home Assistant?
Well, actually, at first I started with domotics. I don't know if you guys know that.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
It's also a Raspberry Pi based program. And I had a lot of crashes with that, with the SD card. And then a friend of mine said, well, you should take a look at Home Assistant. And so I did. But then as well, SD card crashes. So I've been hopping around a bit between domotics and Home Assistant in the first couple of years. But since I think 2017, 2018, I adopted Home Assistant and never went back.
Nice. Yeah, I remember using domotics just before I started using Home Assistant. And I was only using it to basically control or set the settings against some of my Z-Wave devices for... when I was using the USB stick, the very first version of the USB stick. And yeah, like for whatever reason, Domotics had better configuration of Z-Wave devices.
Yeah, in the beginning they had for sure.
Yeah. And then I think Home Assistant, eventually in the Z-Wave project sort of, really took over from that. But yeah, no, it was a great little system. I think it's still actively developed too.
I think so too. I've never looked back, but I mean, I used it for Z-Wave as well, just for some motion sensors and stuff like that.
Yep, exactly.
But never look back.
Yeah. It looks like it is. I'm just looking at their GitHub. Last update was yesterday. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. Recent.
That's cool.
It. So yeah, you start out with Demotix, and where do you go from there? Like, and then you get onto Home Assistant.
Well, yeah, I started with Demotix just to use some motion sensors. I had a recording studio at that time, and I had a very long hallway, and I wanted to put off the lights, put on the lights when there was nobody there. So the switches were far away. So I decided, okay, let's put in something to trigger that. And that's how everything started. And when I came across Home Assistant because of a friend of mine, everything went completely crazy because the amount of integrations, even at that time with Home Assistant, was ridiculous.
So
it was a fest for me. And I still use a lot of different integrations. But when we decided to buy a house, everything in this house where I live right now, everything is controlled via Z-Wave dimmers. And lately, I'm starting to switch over to a lot of ESP home stuff just because of the fun of it.
Yeah. Any custom stuff?
Well, I build a brewery. So I brew a lot of beer because for fun.
Why not?
And everything that I do seems to get out of hand very quickly. So I decided to build my own PLC system-ish with ESP Home. And that's just amazing because all the data that I need and all the controls, everything's in there. So that's truly amazing.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I used a lot of Raspberry Pi systems, but they couldn't really communicate with Home Assistant because I wanted to have the long-term storage.
Yeah.
And especially now with the long-term history stats or what is it, that's going to be my lifesaver.
Yes. That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when we moved in here around the same time, I became a technical director of a hotel. Nice. And we use a KNX 6 system there. And it's pretty good. It works properly, but the UI was horrible. And the way you have to make automations in the UI, at least, is very difficult.
Yeah.
You can program into the KNX devices themselves, but you do have to use a specific software for that.
Yeah.
I do own a license for that, but... if you want to change something, you have to flash every device again, and it's a little bit of a hassle. So that's where my extreme came in, and I decided to put in Home Assistant in the hotel.
Oh, yeah, wow. That's cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
KNX must be like a pretty popular system because we had like Philip back in May that he had his whole house in KNX, right? So...
It's pretty in, especially I think in Europe, it's pretty popular, but I don't have it in my house because it's pretty expensive, but if you build something new, it's very doable.
Yeah, I think it's like a proper, like, professional grade supported, like I think you can pay for like enterprise grade support and stuff, can't you? I thought that was the case.
Yeah, but I decided to do everything myself because of the fun of it. It was already installed mostly, but we try to renovate hotel rooms pretty much every year. Some hotel rooms, not everything, of course, but every hotel room now almost has a KNX system in there.
Very cool.
It's
very nice.
So in terms of, I have, Rahm probably spends more time in hotel rooms than me, but like in terms of from the guest experience, how does having like what changes like compared to a non-KNX control room? Like what differences would I notice as a guest going into one of these rooms?
Well, we try to build the hotel room so you don't have the experience of being in a smart room or something. We have normal switches to control the lights. We have a display for you to control the temperature. We still have a lot of old people or people who are not used to smart houses or whatever. So we try to keep it as simple as possible. But behind that is all the smart stuff. So they don't even notice that it's there. That's great.
Yeah, fantastic.
That's the best way. It is.
Yeah.
I mean, Phil and I have had that kind of philosophy since we've always talked about that, right? Like, it's like the, if your grandmother came in there, would they be able to use it kind of thing, right? Like, my grandmother's not technical at all. So it's would she be able to use it, right? Like, it's that, that's kind of the, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's great. And I think that the hotel rooms, what I do there is mostly control their temperature. Mm-hmm. Because hotel guests leave the room and they leave the windows open, for instance. And we don't want to heat these rooms, for instance, if the rooms are the windows are open, or if they're not present in the hotel room. We can see that with the cart that's next to the door.
Right.
And that's what triggers mostly temperature automations.
Nice.
Yeah. So when you get to the room, it's always around the same temperature. So it's always comfortable for everybody.
That's cool. And now, so that's all KNX driven by Home Assistant, you said?
Well, it used to be pretty much KNX doing its thing.
Yeah.
But you get some limitations because KNX isn't very smart in the way that it's looking to the outside temperature.
Yeah.
It's not looking at the, let's say, the availability of the room. And so that's where I try to come in with Home Assistant and look at the outside temperature and with some clever notifications when rooms are, the windows are opened at a specific time, for instance, that we can go in and close the windows.
Right. Okay.
Mm, that's cool. So do you have like
any energy?
I bet. Absolutely. And do you have like an overview dashboard that you can see, like, you know, where you need to focus your attention? Like, okay, this room's unoccupied, the window's open, like this needs attention, go and do that.
Well, I have a dashboard per room. And that's what my colleagues can see as well at the front desk. So if guests have problems with heating or cooling or whatever, a lot of times people do not understand what they're doing. So if they take out their hotel key with them, well, yeah, then we turn off the AC or we turn off the heating and we keep it at a stable temperature. And we can see they can see a log of what's happening at that system. Then they can adjust or they can tell them, okay, I see you left the window open. That's why you're not heating your room.
Wow, that's cool. And is this all Home Assistant dashboard like that the staff had access to? Very nice.
This is all Home Assistant dashboard,
And what's the propensity for overriding stuff? So let's say I wanted to be super hot in here and I want to keep my window open or whatever, right? Like,
well, the good thing about KNX is that you can put in hard code that if you open the window, then nothing is going to happen. So that's great. Nowadays, I put that in Home Assistant so that if you open the window, that Home Assistant says, okay, we're not going to heat it here because I want to have personally the availability to override that. So I can heat the room with the window open if needed.
Right. Okay.
But that's for the guys at front office. They can't do that.
Sure. That's an override for.
Yeah. And how do you control that? Like, so that you have access to that? Because I know Home Assistant currently doesn't really have, you know, permissions per se. Like, is it just hidden by views or?
Yeah. At the moment it's by views. And it's funny that you brought that up because I think it was just a couple of episodes ago that that
we were talking about this.
And there was a very spot on point about the guy. I don't remember his name, but it was amazing. That's exactly what I wanted to have the ability to give users permissions to certain stuff. That would be amazing.
Yeah. Because I think, that was with the Zero Trust episode at the end.
Yeah.
Because there's always the search button on the dashboard, right? So I'm guessing, you know, if you're just hiding the climate entity, then there's nothing stopping a staff member from hitting that search button and finding the climate entity and overriding it themselves, right? Yeah.
Well, it's going to be difficult for them because the coding of the entities is a bit difficult for them, I think, but it would be possible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And do does each staff member have their own access to the system or?
No, I have access for front office and I have an access account for the staff in the restaurant because then they could control the lighting in the restaurant if they want.
Nice. Right.
And then I have for myself and for other managers.
Yeah, cool.
So I do use the kiosk mode so that they don't actually see the top bar. And it makes something like, it looks like a proper app, you know, so that with the with the mushroom cards, you have the nice looking buttons to go back and forth.
Yeah.
And so they have to go quickly through the dashboards to get to all the hotel rooms they need. But it's a total different view than what I personally use.
Nice. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that's nice. But I mean, it's just the beginning.
Yeah.
Beginning. I like it. What are your grand plans? Like, have you got a roadmap of what you want to sort of unleash or let Home Assistant take over or get integrated into at the hotel?
Well, at the moment, I'm trying to create an integration with our property management system. So I can truly see if a room won't be used for the couple of days or something like that, that I can turn everything off. Because we are a hotel next to the Netherlands' biggest national park, we try to be very eco-friendly and try to conserve as much energy as we can. And so this is one of my biggest goals, to try to decrease our energy usage. And we now have a big PLC system in our hotel. Right. And I think a lot of PLC systems are very closed with no proper connection possibility to Home Assistant. So I'm now trying to experiment with some ESP Home modules as well to take over control.
Nice.
Because, cool. I mean, with all the heating, with all the water usage, gas and whatever, I mean, everything would be controllable using ESP Home.
Yeah. So do you a lot of that at home as well, in your home? Like bringing those same concepts that you're doing professionally at the hotel and things like that, bringing that here into your house?
Well, actually, it works pretty much the other way around. I think I start with an idea and I try it out at home. With every release, actually, I do that. So every release, I update at home first, test everything, and then bring it to the hotel.
Right.
And with new ideas as well. So the funny thing is, because of the brewery's pretty much a PLC system, how I use it. So a lot of knowledge I gain there, I can use to create a PLC-ish system in the hotel.
Right. Okay. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's lovely.
Considering that the hotel is pretty much a very production environment, how often do you release or update the Home Assistant release at the hotel? Like, we're on a monthly release cycle. Would you say you would give it until a dot point release is being released, or do you wait, you know, a whole month, like you're a month behind, just to ensure that, you know, bugs have been ironed out? How do you manage that?
Well, normally I start updating at home with the .1 release, and then with the .2 or .3 release, I update the hotel.
Yep.
And this month is a bit different because I was so excited about the long-term history. Because I used to record 365 days. And that's terrible for reboots, for updates, backups and whatnot. So they're both now running on the .0.
Nice.
Take a bit of a leap of faith.
Yeah.
And do you find that you have to have like a staging or a test? Like, do you have like a window where you do the update? Like, are you worried about the Home Assistant system being down while you've pushed an update out? Like, how do you manage that?
I used to be. I used to be very, very scared when I pressed the update button. But yeah. Now, actually not anymore. I think this year, especially 23, is amazing for the updates. It's so very stable. It's amazing.
And how many rooms is currently running through Remisism?
So we have 39 hotel rooms, two swimming pools, a couple of saunas, the entire restaurant, and a couple of, how do you say that, boardrooms.
Nice.
And everything is controlled by Home Assistant and KNX pretty much.
Great. And what's Home Assistant running on in terms of hardware at the hotel? Like, is it just a Raspberry Pi in a closet somewhere, or have you got something a bit more beefier?
I tried that, but it's it's getting slow pretty quickly. Then I now run it on a i7 server, and it at the moment only has 8 gigs of RAM, but that works pretty good.
That's amazing.
Nice. Do you what do you do for like a availability kind of thing? Like what happens if Home Assistant goes down for whatever reason?
Well, then I'm going to be in a panic. No, I'm because of KNX,
right.
The probability that it when it goes down, the core functionality is still there. So the guests do not have the experience that it's down. But I mean, in the restaurant, I use adaptive lighting in Home Assistant to control the lighting. So it will probably stay at one setting for that moment. Okay. I mean, when it's down, I'll be probably up and running within an hour. Yeah. Because I have a backup system standing there waiting if necessary.
Nice.
So in the restaurant, what does adaptive lighting look like? Are you changing color temperatures or brightness?
Just brightness.
Yeah.
So the adaptive lighting integration from via hacks, it's amazing. But I mean, I'm using 24 zones at the moment. So that's pretty intensive.
Yeah.
But it's it looks amazing because you don't have the feeling that the light changes any moment of the day.
That's cool.
That's amazing. Yeah. And anything else that's like controlled in the restaurant as a, in terms of versus a hotel room that would be like interesting to know about?
Well, actually not that much. In the in the restaurant, we do have a ventilation system that is controlled via the old, let's put it, old PLC system. So I'm going to take that over one day. But I do measure the CO2 levels and humidity temperature just for monitoring reasons at the moment.
Yeah, very nice.
And does all of this go back into some kind of like an energy dashboard? You're measuring... Are you measuring any of that kind of stuff? Or
yeah, we do measure that. We are obliged in the Netherlands to in our size of company to measure every energy you use, and we measure everything.
Very cool. Okay,
that's interesting. So there's a legal obligation that you have to measure this energy. Yep. And does Home Assistant give you enough information or enough certainty that you can use that as your reporting for legal purposes?
Well, I had an inspection like last year about this, and they were surprised about the detail that I'm measuring energy, because a lot of normal systems, they report every 15 minutes or something,
right?
Because we can watch real time. It's much more accurate. You can see what's really happening instead of, 15 minutes ago, we had a spike of energy. We'll try to find that.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. So yeah, like Home Assistant is giving you like real-time data that you can then report. That's cool. It reminds me of, you know, like how the Matter people are using Home Assistant to develop on Matter because it's following the standards, and now... You know, here you are needing to do this legal compliance for energy reporting, and Home Assistant can do a better job than the industry standard. You know, tools are out there that are doing every 15 minutes or something.
Yeah, and they're pretty expensive as well. I mean, thousands of euros just for a system that monitors energy, gas, and water.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, I see different groups, different sectors, charging stations. I can take everything out and look the specific things, what they use.
Yeah.
That's much more efficient.
That's really well. Yeah.
If I was a guest and I was to plug, you know, like something into the wall that was very high, you know, maybe I, for whatever reason, I bring my server along to your hotel and plug it into the wall and decide to run a server in your hotel room, would you be able to see, you know, room number 12 is using an abnormally high amount of energy? Do you have that particular view over?
Well, no. We measure just the industrial stuff, like the kitchen, like heating, cooling, ventilation, the swimming pools, saunas, stuff like that. That's what the things we can measure, because you do not want to judge your hotel guests. If they want to have a room of 25 degrees Celsius, be my guest, because that's, if they're comfortable, then I'm happy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. And same thing with like using hair dryers and this and that. Exactly. And like, you can't, where do you start? Stop nitpicking if you start there, right? It's
we try to bring across that we try to conserve energy as good as we can, but we don't want guests to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially tourists and stuff like that. It's you want them to feel at home to some extent, right? So,
yeah. Sure.
Yeah. So going back to your home, what are your, I mean, you talked about some of how the methodology that you use to try it at home, do whatever there, and then bring it over. So what other stuff do you do at home? Like what are some things that you monitor, the things that you automate?
I try to make the home as UI-less as possible.
Yep.
My girlfriend, she likes Home Assistant, but she doesn't like it as much as I do. She just wants the knobs to turn on the light, turn off the light if she needs. So she still has that. But I do like to automate. So I try to put millimeter wave sensors now in every room. I tried the ES Presence Bluetooth detection everywhere.
Yeah.
Wasn't the very big hit for us.
Okay.
Any particular reason why?
It's a bit slow. Mm-hmm. And my girlfriend, she sometimes wears her watch and sometimes she doesn't. So
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah.
Yep.
But it should have been the perfect way because we have four cats. Yeah.
Oh, cats. Right.
Yeah. And I don't want them to trick in the home. I don't want them to trigger the lighting everywhere all day, right. all night. So of course we have the presence with the GPS if we're home or not. But I'm now trying to combine the millimeter wave with the PIR sensors and maybe the Bluetooth, whatever, to try and keep it as accurate as possible.
Yeah. Does your millimeter wave sensors, just again, as someone who hasn't used one yet at this point, I know, Phil, you have.
You haven't? I
know, right?
I know. What's this guy? He's stuck in the Stone Ages. What is he doing?
I know. It takes a lot. It takes a lot. No. So when you're doing that, how does it, do you find that it triggers a lot on your cats and stuff as well? Or do you have it at a height where it's high enough that it won't? Or...
Well, I now have them pretty much at table level.
Yeah.
They're now just loose with the ESP next to it because I'm testing it out. But I'm planning to put them in behind the frames of the pictures.
Yep.
That's cool.
And have the picture frames around the house with millimeter wave sensors. And because they're then naturally pointed up a little bit, I think that will help with the false positives.
Angle of cats versus humans. Yeah. Okay.
Well, these animals can jump pretty high and be very annoying. So there will be some false positives.
And you've got four of them. So it's.
Yeah. But we I recently put the pressure sensors in the bed. So when we go to bed, then all the motion sensors and millimeter wave sensors go off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then we can sleep good. So,
yeah.
What pressure sensor did you use, just out of curiosity?
Well, it's a resistance band.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Like the strip. I have some.
Yeah, somewhere. The strip. And these work pretty good.
Yeah.
And it's just hooked into an ESP and then straight into Home Assistant.
Yeah.
Yep. Very nice.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. And that triggers the door lock as well. I know you guys have been talking about locks a lot of times.
Yeah.
But I just recently with Black Friday bought my first smart door lock.
Nice.
Ooh, what did you
still
choose?
Have to
what
get used to the sound?
Yeah,
the like in the middle of the night. Yeah, yeah. What smart lock did you end up going with?
I bought the Locked. It's LOQED. Okay. It's I think it's a Dutch brand.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I don't think I've heard of that.
And how does that integrate with Home Assistant? Is it Wi-Fi based?
Well, I think it's a Bluetooth system, and it's got its own hub. And the hub can connect to Home Assistant. I think it's cloud dependent, though. I'm not 100% sure.
Right. Oh, look at that. Right on their website. Works with Home Assistant.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. See, this is what we're saying. What wasn't like classic Netherlands, right? Like in European, like first thing you get it in Home Assistant. And how do you integrate with that lock? Is it fingerprints, PIN code, keys?
Well, it connects to your phone with a BLE. And you then have to touch a little display that's on the outside of the lock, and then it opens.
Okay.
And you can program a PIN code in there if you if your battery died or something, or you can. Yep. I think that's it. Yeah.
It's interesting. It and so, do you have the ability to see? Yeah. Do you have the ability to see who unlocked the door? Like, because I'm just trying to think if you both came home at the same time and you've both got your phones in your pocket and you touched it. Who gets to say they open, unlock the door?
Ooh, never tried that before. I'm going to do that.
Just round robin, whoever came up to the Bluetooth first, I guess.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's cool. And yeah, I think with the millimeter wave sensors, it's really hard with pets, right? Because these things are designed to pick up, you know, breathing. So how you limit it to... Like with PIR sensors, you can just adjust the sensitivity, you know.
But that's my target,
Yeah. So, yeah.
But that's why I thought the BLE was going to be amazing with the ES Presence.
Mm.
I still have high hopes that it's going to be an ESP home as good as it is around ES Presence.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to have two ESPs in every room. But,
exactly.
With the BLE, I think... the combination of all three would be the best solution.
Right. Well, you still run into the problem of leaving, like my wife leaves her phone. She never has any idea where her phone is, right? She'll be in one room, phone will be in another room, watch will be in a third room. Like, right. So there are barriers to BLE, right? So unless they are wearing like a wristband or something like that consistently, right? Which, it's just unreasonable, I think, but yeah.
Well, funny story about that. There are very, very tiny BLE beacons built for hospital use.
Yeah.
And I bought a couple of those and I put these on the cats. So I disabled the motion sensors and the millimeter wave when there was just a cat in the room. Figure out how it works. Was fun.
That's funny.
How did you find that? Like, was it accurate enough? Like,
oh yeah, they were very accurate. It was called Nanotag, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I can look it up what it was. It was great, but they have a battery life of about 2-3 months.
Okay.
And then you have to replace them. So.
And you just put it onto their like little harness or collar, whatever, the collar. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. They were
pretty good.
That's funny.
I mean, 2 to 3 months battery life, that's pretty decent considering it's on 24/7 as a tracker, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Although I do wonder, now that I'm thinking about it, could you use a tile instead?
The tiles are pretty large.
Oh, so it's that small, is it? Because tile's pretty small as it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, it's tiny. It's like this. It's oh, wow. really, really small.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, then I'm more than happy with 2 to 3 months battery life if it's that only that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just like a button cell battery in there.
Yeah, I think so, but you can't replace the battery. It's all integrated.
Oh,
right. So okay. after 2-3 months, you have to replace the entire thing. And I think it was about $8 a piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. That can get costly.
Man, I feel bad about the hardware wastage then. Like, you're generating more
e-waste. That's why I decided not to do that.
Yeah, fair enough.
But that's medical, right? It is any medical use thing is it's typically one time use and then you chuck it, right? That's it.
So hotels have a lot of CCTV video cameras around the place. Have you done anything with integrating that into Home Assistant at the hotel and or at your house as well? Have you considered maybe using cameras in the home to determine if there's a cat in a room or a person in a room?
Well, I do have some cameras in the house, around the house pretty much, not in the house. Only in the brewery I have a camera because if something explodes there or something, then I can act on
it. You want to know, yeah.
But next to that, only outdoors. And in the hotel, we do have a couple of cameras, but not that much because there as well, you want to have the privacy of your hotel guests. That's primary why we decided not to put too many cameras there.
Yeah, fair enough.
But thing that I'm very happy about Home Assistant is because I use a lot of energy at home as well. I drive an electric car. We do not have any natural gas in our house. So these houses are built with a heat pump. We use a lot of energy, and that's why they decided the constructors decided to put a very high main fuse in here. Right. So we have to pay like 900 euros a year extra just because we have the potential to use more energy.
Based on the fuse size.
It's almost like an excise tax, right? It's like a luxury, like, hey, you have the ability to do this, you have to pay. Interesting. And that's not actually including the usage. That's just because you have
it. Exactly.
Oh, wow.
And so we decided when we went in here to let them to degrade it, so put it a step lower, just like a normal house would be. And I use Home Assistant to manage the energy usage between the brewery, the car, dryer, and stuff like that. That if something is getting too high, then I'm able to shut it out and don't have any issues.
Right. So I'm guessing there's a cap then on how much energy your house can consume.
Yeah, there is.
Right. And so then Home Assistant can say, okay, actually, you're going to use too much energy if you put all these three things on. I'm going to turn one off.
Yeah, and then it decides what should be off because I have a priority list because the brewery is always, of course, priority one.
Yeah.
And then the rest has to follow.
Of course. Yeah.
And I have to, I had to put in the same system in the hotel as well because we have, we had two less energy. How do I say that? We had to use more energy than we had. Because the government wants us to reduce our amount of natural gas.
Right.
So we had to put in electric heaters for kitchen and electric ovens and stuff like that. And there I had the same script that I tested at home to give priority to appliances there as well. So that worked great. But now we have a bigger connection, thank God, so we can use more electricity.
Nice.
Yeah, right.
Do you to automate all these things, do you use Home Assistant natively or do you use Node-RED or anything?
I did use Node-RED in the beginning, but since the UI automation possibility, I switched over because
cool.
Yeah, Node-RED is good, but it's for me it's a little bit slow in some cases.
Interesting. Okay.
And so you're using the UI to create those automations, or are you then dumping them out to YAML? Like, what's your workflow?
It's a bit of a combination.
Mm-hmm.
I do YAML and I do the UI because if you If you sometimes you have to use YAML because the UI is not sufficient.
Anything advanced or
state attributes. Thank you. There it is. If you have to use some attributes, then sometimes you need to use YAML.
Right.
But it's getting better.
Yeah. That's cool. That it's actually very interesting. I'm just trying to think about it because, again, like what you were saying earlier. Sorry, I'm still like 5 minutes behind here. It's when you're talking about the fact that you have no natural gas in your home and stuff like that, right? It's all electrical, electricity driven. So it's like I'm just trying to imagine, like for us, we have natural gas for our fireplaces. I've got, I think my water heater is natural gas, stuff like that, right? But I guess your power grid is probably a lot more renewable than ours here, even though we do have, I mean, for us, it's for where I am, it's primarily nuclear and hydro. So it's not terrible for what they say, but it's not like it's coal burning and that kind of thing, but it's still.
Well, they still have a lot of debates about if it's the way to go here. Sometimes they are talking about putting hydrogen through the gas pipes and that would be the way to go, but I don't know. There's just the rules here.
Yeah.
Say you have to build electric right now, so.
Yeah, and I think it's slowly becoming around the world. I know that where I'm living, they've just, you know, said by this date, you know, new houses will have natural gas. That's it. You know, everyone's trying to phase out of it. Do you have any solar power or anything like that at the home that you can?
Yeah, at home we're completely neutral.
Amazing.
We have 31 solar panels, and we can. We don't use everything ourselves because we don't have a battery right now. But with the rules now, we pay around -5 euros a year.
Great.
It's not bad. Well,
yeah. It's not bad.
And that's with an electric car as well, like charging the car as well?
Well, yeah, I do cheat a little bit right there because I charge at the hotel most of the times because we're a big user, you have lower prices. So it's cheaper for me to charge at the hotel than it's to charge at home.
Okay. Fair. Yeah, that makes sense. Plus, you know, the car's sitting there for a few hours while you're at work anyway, so may as well.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then I guess it's not something you have to worry about in your, you know, priority script as well, right? Like I'm not going to charge the car at home, so I don't have to, you know, turn off the beer tonight because I need to charge the car for tomorrow.
Yeah, true. But I mean, the car charger is smart as well. So it can see as well if you're using that amount of energy, I have this capacity to use to charge the car. It's going to be slow, but
Okay. So there's like a two-way talking from the car. So the car can say, okay, like, yes, the house is using this much electricity. I can slow charge or I can fast charge. Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think a lot of people use it like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Ryan, is that similar to how yours works?
In theory?
In theory?
I've never actually tried it, tested it. I just kind of use it. But I have had my main breaker pop once, so maybe not. It's while I was running my dryer is still electric. So while I was running the dryer and I think probably the washer and the car had just been plugged in and all of that stuff. I think I had a pop, my main popped once, which is weird because I have a 200 amp service coming to my house, right? So that's decent. And
200 amps, man.
Yeah. It's when I got the electric car, everyone was like, okay, make sure you have enough. Like one of my colleagues had to go get an extra, like he only had a 100 amp circuit in his home. So he paid the power company to come out and deliver another 100 amp circuit to him, whatever. And and I looked in my basement. I was like, okay, cool. Yeah, I guess I already have 200 amp. That's just what they built it with, right? So I didn't modify it or anything like that. But so maybe my charger. I think it's supposed to be intelligent, but it's not.
Right.
Yeah. I was going to ask, you talked about how you drive a lot of the automations and stuff in the hotel, but what about at home? I know you said your girlfriend's not a big she doesn't want to go into the app and press buttons and stuff like that. Do you guys do voice at all? Do you guys primarily try and do things through presence? And
well, we try to do as much through presence and motion.
Yeah.
I now started to try the voice.
Yeah.
Because it would be very handy in the brewery to shout that some pump has to be shut off or whatever.
Right.
That's where I still use a display to control it. That would be nice. So that's I'm experimenting with it right now.
Nice.
I have been in contact with you guys, the Home Assistant guys to deliver my voice for Home Assistant voice.
Yeah.
But I mean, the script is so long. It's going to take a lot of time. It would be very nice to stream to myself. Put it out.
Yeah. That's funny.
Wow.
Or just tricking your cats too.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I think my girlfriend's going to hate me.
Yeah.
I wonder how accurate it would be, right? Is it going to be, surely you would be able to tell the difference, right? But yeah, that's going to be interesting. So how long is that taking you to do? Like, are you still actively doing that or have you finished it?
Well, I'm still getting around it. I think I've done 250 sentences right now.
Right.
But it's intense. So I took a break from it, but I'll get back to it soon, probably.
And you're doing it for English or Dutch?
No, in Dutch.
Nice.
Yeah, because cool. I think there's many English versions already around.
Yep.
And you have the different resolutions. In Dutch, there's only a low resolution at the moment. So I thought this would be a good problem.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you for contributing. People like you are doing it, right?
Not there yet.
No, that's good.
In terms of technologies like Z-Wave, Zigbee, Wi-Fi, BLE,
everything.
Everything. Do you lean towards one, like more a higher preference towards something or the other, or?
Because I use the Fibaro Z-Wave dimmers, these are amazing. I do love them and they are really responsive, so that's great. But for stuff like motion, Zigbee is a little bit quicker, I think, most cases.
100%.
But I'm now moving to the ESP Home version with the millimeter wave and the PIR in there.
Cool. That's neat.
So the ESP Home will be Wi-Fi based. You think that's quicker than Zigbee?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. Even like a millimeter wave Zigbee sensor, you think like the ESP Home is quicker than that?
Well, I haven't tested a Zigbee millimeter wave, but just ESP Home.
Yeah.
But the ESP Home millimeter wave is quicker than my Zigbee motion sensor, so.
Fair.
Interesting, yeah. I found that, the Zigbee, just the PIR sensor I've got from Aquara can be really quick at picking up motion. I've got the Aquara FP1s and they have a enter and leave event. And I think the infrared can pick up much quicker than just the enter event on the FP1.
Really?
And I think, I'm guessing millimeter wave sensors just need that tiny little, for whatever reason, it can be a bit slower. I think there's a bit more processing that needs to be done on the unit for whatever reason. But 100% Zigbee motion or those events has been much faster than Z-Wave for me. Just walking into a room, I think I was doing an experiment earlier in the year. I had a Z-Wave motion sensor and a Zigbee, both battery powered, right next to each other. And I would report in Home Assistant which one actually detected motion first. And it was always the Zigbee sensor.
In the bathroom, I have got a Zigbee motion sensor. And even though I think it's pretty quick, I'm going to be 1.5 meters in before it turns on the lights.
Yep.
So my girlfriend already has pushed the light switch before that. So I have to be quicker than that.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that's it. I always have the issue of the light switches on the outside. So from a user's point of view, they're walking into the room. So before they get to the room, they push the light switch. I'm like, if they just walk into the room, the lights will come on for them, right? So how do I beat that?
So did you disable them or?
No, I don't want to disable switches because then the motion sensor doesn't work for whatever reason. Then I'm.
Yeah, you're back to darkness.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. It's the design challenges of the smart home, right?
Well, that keeps us from the street, you know.
That's right.
That's true.
That's funny. I was going to say, in your brewery, what other automation things are you doing in there?
Well, because brewing beer in a normal day takes about 7 hours,
okay,
give or take. The brewing cycle is dependent on a lot of temperature states and time variables, because you have, let's put it like that, 50 minutes at 67°C, and then you have to ramp up to a different temperature, et cetera. Everything is controlled in the ESB home. So if home system goes down, still does its thing because it's programmed in every step of the way. And then after that, you have fermentation for around a week. And there, all the temperature steps are programmed in as well. So I just set it once. I load it in once before the brew day. And then I don't have to do anything, just to control the pumps and turn on or turn off the heating elements.
Cool.
Because that's still a manual switch, just for safety reasons.
Right. And is there like different profiles for different types of beer, or is it just like, is it kind of all beer use the same
methodology? At the moment, I have a configuration page that I just loaded in using some sliders and some checkboxes.
Yeah.
So I loaded in on the brew day, I check the recipe and put everything in. Then I say load it up, and then it hides the configuration page as well, so I don't have the opportunity to mess anything up.
Yeah.
Nice. And
then when I start brewing, then everything goes to the ESP and is programmed in.
Very cool. Yeah, that is until you put your voice part in and you say turn off something and it turns off some one of your brewing elements or something like that.
well, that's funny because I put the heating element, it's a PWM modulated element.
Yeah.
And so I decided to test the voice, and I say, hey, put on the lights in the brewery. So the heating element went on
because
it's now configured as a light because there's no PWM input or something like that.
Right.
So I had to create a different room that's called brew controller instead of brewery.
Right. Or, I mean, the other thing, you could just completely exclude the brewery pieces from voice.
Who knows, if you don't want to use it.
Right. Or I mean, you can do it through, you can control it through just like scenes or scripts like that, right? Yeah. So where you fire off turn on an input Boolean, and then that kicks off whatever other pieces you want. That way it's a little, maybe it's not as protected, I guess, but.
But most things are controlled by input Booleans and stuff like that, input numbers.
Yeah, that's
as
cool.
As a non-beer drinker, and this whole brewing thing has nothing to me. You mentioned before there's explosion risk. Like, what sort of explosion are we talking about? Are we talking about like a whole room getting destroyed with beer everywhere, or like are we going to look at like a James Bond movie where like there's fireballs everywhere? Like, what explosion risk are you worried about?
Well, fermentation can be very vigorous. When fermentation happens, the sugars get consumed by the yeast and they exclude alcohol and CO2, and the CO2 bubbles off. But if there is some sort of blockage anywhere, something like that, it builds up a lot of pressure. So the vessel could erupt just because it gets by the blockage or something weird can happen.
Yeah. Have you had one of these?
It's mostly beer and yeast everywhere. Then, yeah.
Nice. Yeah. And it hasn't happened yet, or?
No, unfortunately not. Okay. But you never know.
Yeah.
It's never too late.
No.
Is it like a way you can control that? Like, I don't know, like how do you prevent, like, or is it just bad luck, you know, that the recipe was bad? Well,
it's a bit of bad luck, bit of bad preparation, maybe, I don't know, but, the risk is always there. So, that's just the only reason why I put a camera there, just to monitor if everything's going okay. Or that if you forgot to close a valve properly or something and everything's leaking, you know, that's, never take any risks.
Yeah. Any plans to like automate the process of, you know, being able to, push a button in Home Assistant and it puts the right amount of ingredients in and to a certain recipe, sets all the temperatures up correctly, closes the valves up and then just starts? Like, could you go to that level?
You could, I think. Just a couple of weeks ago, I was in a professional brewery that pretty much have that. I there decided that that would not be something for me because it's a little bit more fun just to get the grains out by hand and mill everything.
Yeah.
So you do have a little bit of hand work there.
You lose the charm of the actual brewing process, right? Like it's that makes sense.
Not so hands-on then. Yeah, that's fair.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. And this, how I have it right now is already pretty ridiculous. So.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, you might as well just go to the store and buy some beer, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Then, you know, it's not, I mean, I'm just thinking maybe you could get like ChatGPT to come up with a recipe for you, you know, just like, you know, come up with a new beer flavor or something like that.
Well, there is a podcast or a YouTube show, I guess, who did that. I haven't watched it yet, but they did.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. There you go.
I don't know. I feel like I haven't tried a ChatGPT recipe yet, whether for food or otherwise, but it could be really good or it could just be terrible. What are they like? But you'll have to let us know, Jasper, if you try it and you know, how did it go?
I will.
That's good.
Oh yeah. The new to do. That's just going to be a lifesaver for me. I mean, do now use Microsoft To Do. I love it. Mm-hmm. And there's a integration via hacks that you can put in repetitive tasks at the moment. Mm-hmm. That's what I use to get tasks to clean every filter for the air conditionings in the rooms.
Right.
Yep. And I think if we get a lot further in with the to-dos in Home Assistant, then I only have to give housekeeping Home Assistant as an app. They can see what tasks they have to do and for maintenance as well. And if I get the integration to work with their PMS, then Home Assistant is the only thing these guys would need. That would be amazing for me.
Wow.
Yeah, that's cool. So, yeah, so Home Assistant could control, okay, this room was checked out today, add a to-do list for housekeeping to go and clean that room.
Yeah, and I mean, if then the task is there, because once every 2 months we clean the aircon filters or stuff like that, then it puts it in their tasks automatically. I think Home Assistant could do that.
Is there like, do you like check off tasks? For example, let's say housekeeping comes in and does like that. Do you use any like NFC tags or something where they like tap their phone or do something like that? Like, I know I've seen that being used by like security guards at like hospitals and stuff to say, hey, I've come in, I've looked at this area, and they'll go tap the wall, right? Like a little receiver there or whatever. But do you do that? Or is there any plans of doing that kind of thing to automatically say, hey, you know what? Like, for example, if there's an NFC on the side of an AC unit, you go tap that and say, okay, yeah, filter's been changed. Like,
oh, would be very interesting. I mean, we don't do that right now, but
yeah,
you're giving me some cool ideas. But I mean, housekeeping doesn't use a lot of checklists, only for tasks that they have to do like once a month or once in a while. And and it's good if we give them the possibility that it comes up in their daily program. I mean, they now have an app that they only see, all right, this one has departed and this one is arriving today, so we have to clean it. And then they have papers for long-term tasks. I mean, It's a bit, they get lost and they forget.
It's hard to keep track of too, right? Especially when it's like, it's not that everybody's coming on the same time and leaving at the same time, right? Or on the same day. Like, you're here for 3 days, I'm here for five, Phil's here for one. Like, so it's hard to coordinate those. And you can't just say, okay, today is the 30th, we're going to go through, do these tasks, because there's still people in the rooms, right? Yeah. It's,
I'm wondering if you could even use something like Grocery just to track the chore, like clean.
Well, I tried that, when I tried it, you weren't able to put it in a different view, just specific for that room. And I only want to see the task if it's when they have to do it right now or in the coming days that room is available for them to do that task.
Yeah,
because otherwise they would have a list too big to see anything.
Yeah.
Although there is a Grocery integration with Hack in Hack, so I'm wondering if you could use Grocery to manage that chore and then have a filter to display it only in Home Assistant when it's due within X number of days or something.
Yeah, that would be amazing. I have high hopes for the to-do integration we have right now. I mean, built everything they need to know. I've put everything in Microsoft To Do because we are a Office 365 company.
Yep.
And the Microsoft To Do integration will probably get there. And maybe this will work. Let's hope.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
No, I'm really excited for the To Do feature. I think it's got a lot of potential just to change lists around the place.
Yeah.
Do you have like a lot of battery devices at the hotel, or is everything wired? I'm just trying to think of battery management. Like, how would you manage that?
Well, mostly it's wired, but the only thing we have that's battery powered, that's the remote control for the television and the in-room safes. But the batteries on these things last for years.
Yeah. You don't have to worry about replacing those too often. Yeah, it's not like you have to go around replacing window sensors every few months or anything like
that. That's all wired in.
Yeah, that's good.
That's good. Yeah, keeps maintenance, their jobs easier too, right? Like, it's not your maintenance staff. They don't have to run around, test every time and see what's going on, or look at the battery stats and be like, okay, I got to run up to room 4 today because the first's checked out and it's battery's low or whatever. It's just, yeah.
And then you're always too late.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Well, Jesper, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. Really cool to see that you have a Home Assistant-powered hotel. Really cool. So, yeah, if you're in the Netherlands, go check it out. Like, sounds fantastic. Thank you so much. Really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Cheers.
Cheers.
If you want to share your Home Assistant journey or come on as a guest, reach out to us at feedback@hasspodcast.io. That's hasspodcast.io.
The Home Assistant podcast is hosted by Phil Hawthorne and myself, Rohan Karamandi. For links to topics we discussed today, check out our show notes on hasspodcast.io.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.